Hello, everyone. It's Suzanne Gannon here from Australia. I'm currently one of the four co-editors of Gender and Education, and this podcast is about peer review for impact. I'd like to begin with a moment or two just thinking about impact in Australia. ERA exercise, the research assessment exercise, and its latest iteration of impact case studies has a particular definition of impact that I think is too narrow for us. Also, in the UK, the REF has imposed a certain definition of impact. However, if we take a more broader sense of what impact is on our scholarly communities, our people, then we might think about how a text, because we're talking about a text when we're talking about a journal article, how it might most effectively connect to, engage with its readers, potential users of the research that we're disseminating through this mode of a research article. So I'm going, first of all, what is peer review? This is It's a process that I think is deeply embedded in academic life at every level. When you do your PhD, the examiners that it goes out to are, in effect, more senior, but they're peer reviewers. It's a peer review process whereby experts in the field assess the extent to which contribution is being made to that field. So if you think about the journal peer reviewing processes in a similar way, you're part, by entering into them, you are part of a scholarly community that is managing accuracy, trustworthiness, standards, quality of material that is shaping that field. And of course, we're very interested in that. Those words sound quite conservative, but we're very interested in innovations and contributions that stretch the field. So the process is as follows. Each paper that is submitted to the ScholarOne portal is reviewed by one of the editors. And at that point, a decision is made whether or not it should be sent out to reviewers. Once that decision has been made, that the paper is ready to go out to reviewers, it will be sent to two peer reviewers who we feel are expert in appropriate areas of the text. It may be. Sometimes people suggest PhD scholars who may be current candidates but are doing very thorough work in a particular area and might be right up to date with the literature, but aren't yet visible by having their own profiles. So we have quite a large database of reviewers, but people are very busy and we need to keep that database refreshing and make sure that there are that there's a continually expanding scholarly community. Part of the reciprocity, of course, that I mentioned earlier is the fact that if you publish anything, if you send anything into a journal, there are other people reviewing your work. So a proper reciprocal relationship would mean that you also step up and are prepared to review other people's work. Because each paper goes to at least two reviewers and more if there are discrepancies that suggest this or gaps that suggest that this would be worthwhile, it's important that you really take the time to do the best job that you can. I'll talk a little bit more about that later and about what impact that has on the decision that you make whether or not you will review. Because, of course, it is a labour of love. And it takes some time. So, after the peer reviewers are selected by the editors, an invitation will come out inviting them to review a particular paper. The abstract will be attached so you can have a quick scan of it and have a look at if you think it has you have something to offer. If you, and in particular, if you have the time do the review over the next month or so. And what I would suggest is that you make a realistic decision and you make the decision as soon as you can. One of the serious problems that we have, well, one is the worst probably, is that people just ignore the emails as if they'll go away. What that means is that the request gets stuck in the system and we have a long lingering period when we don't know if we have a reviewer or not because time passes. So make a decision quickly, and either if you make yourself unavailable, then at least the editors know that they can go and find someone else, that they need to do that soon so the author isn't hanging around waiting for ages. And it can be a good idea to put it into your calendar so that you know you've blocked out a couple of hours, usually, to give the paper the attention that it deserves during that, and devote the time to really engage deeply with a piece of writing by another scholar about their research. You are learning about writing, what works, what doesn't, how it might be, how a text might be tweaked and improved and become more persuasive in its argument. You might be able to provide really valuable information to an author about a methodological problem that they may not have grappled with. You may know scholars that they could cite that they weren't aware of. And if you have been the recipient, and I hope that you have, of a generous, detailed, transformative review that helps you completely lift your work up to another level, then you'll understand how important it is that we engage in this reciprocally, and you have the capacity to bring your knowledge usefully, productively, generously to another person's work. Again, the Taylor and Francis website does have some sample comments that you might find useful. I think it's very effective to begin a review by summarising back to the author what you think that they are trying to achieve in their paper, and that provides a good foundation for assessing what how effectively they have done that. So I have a couple of examples of reviews for a particular paper. The first one that I think are very good and useful reviews, most importantly, a review should be useful, respectful. And I think that these are good examples. So this is a paper that's undergoing major revision, but the reviewers were worded. Now, I've got a couple of good examples of quite thorough reviews that I'll refer to. The two papers that I'm going to talk about in no detail at all are both undergoing major revisions at the moment. So these were the comments that they had from peer reviewers to guide them in their reviews. So the first reviewer begins the review by saying what the paper does. The paper draws on a project in such and such a type of school. I won't give you the details because it need not be identifiable. The second sentence by the reviewer, it is interested in gendered notions of blah, blah, blah in relation to blah, 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 and it attempts to compare blah, blah to blah, blah, blah. The third sentence summarises the theoretical framing of the paper, which is very important for gender and education. It uses this so-and-so's notion of blah and so-and-so's notion of blah to question what blah blah means for these two groups of students. Now, a summarising sentence. While there is much that I found very interesting in this paper and that I think could eventually make an important contribution to the field, it needs some major revisions before it can be published. I outline my suggestions for revisions below. Now, this reviewer has provided 8 very detailed points that
she thinks will improve the paper. Some of those are about the national context. It's very common that authors will write from their perspective in the UK or in Canada or in Korea and be blind to the fact that readers are located anywhere and won't understand some of the specificities of your local policy context or whatever. So some of the comments are around that. The reviewer is also quite explicit and very on the money with some useful resources that she points the author to. It can be incredibly useful to be pointed to just those texts that are seminal that you overlooked somehow or other in your hermetically sealed study where you've been busily writing the paper for forever. Sometimes the reviewer has pointed out particular moments in the article where the argument is dropped or where a concept is dropped in without being further developed or perhaps without being applied to the data in another section of the paper. So it's very useful to feed back to the author what's working and what's not in terms of how the thinking is framed theoretically. The second reviewer of the same paper, and again I'm not going to give you the details, begins her review with "This is a very interesting paper which seems to address some different questions around girls and blah blah blah, leading to a potentially strong and original conclusion about," then she lists some issues. "The theoretical framing is interesting and well utilised in the analysis of the data. The two case studies make for an interesting contrast. However, I have a few suggestions which I would hope could strengthen the paper further and make it easily accessible to a wider audience." This reviewer again has provided 9 quite specific points. They include naming particular literature as well that the author might look at, asking the author to rethink the abstract, which doesn't really preview the argument in the way that it promises. And it also points out the blindness of a national context that won't make sense to people outside that context. And to some key ideas that need to be elaborated in more detail, for example, neoliberalism, which is often just dropped in without any work around it. I think it's also important, and it's often stated by reviewers, that the implications of the research be made clear in the conclusion. Now, I can't go into a lot of detail with these, obviously, because they're confidential, but I do. I would like to read out a message from an author who was undertaking who submitted in this comment with her revised article. "Thank you so much," the author begins, "for the opportunity to return this manuscript and complete the requested revisions." The reviewer's generous attention to my paper enabled me to present a much more robust argument. Reviewer 2 also noticed blah, blah, blah. Finally, a reviewer suggested blah, blah, blah. "The paper has been polished with the help of the reviewers and the editor's requests, and I hope it is now ready. Gratitude for all of the assistance in helping the paper become its best version." I think that that's a really beautiful way of putting it, helping the paper become its best version. The author has really acknowledged that this has been a collaborative effort, even though the author doesn't know who those reviewers were. Their ethical, detailed responsiveness to the argument that was trying to make its way into the world has enabled that author to refine the argument so that it's much more effective and is likely to have more impact. Now, of course, most papers that come into gender and education will go through several rounds of reviewing. And the second set of comments that I'll make reference to are to a revised resubmitted paper. Now, it's crucial in this instance that the paper has been returned to the same reviewers. I think that this is one of the ethical practices that are very important for us in this world of scholarship. It's difficult when a reviewer provides a detailed response and then says, but I don't want to look at it again, don't return it to me, or they refuse the second request to check if the paper has met the recommendations that have been made. Obviously, when a paper goes to a new reviewer, because we still need to maintain the same breadth of reviews, that reviewer might come up with a completely different set of recommendations, and this can be really difficult for an author. However, of course, the collaboration expands. It may be that the paper benefits from another eye at that point as well. Although, remember, the editor is always there and ensuring that there are enough eyes. So this revised paper, the second one I'm going to talk about, reviewer one is looking at the paper for a second time. So reviewer one is able to open with the comment, I appreciate the work that the authors have done to address concerns raised in regard to the first draft of this paper. Many sections are stronger now, but there are other areas that still, in my view, do not quite work. Generally, the literature review and theory sections are good. Most of my concerns arise in terms of the coding and data analysis. I have tried to make concrete suggestions for addressing most of them. Some of these are things I touched on in my comments in the first draft, and others are new points that arose for me as I read this revised version. Now, I think this is a very intelligent and useful comment from this reviewer. It is inevitable that as the paper is more and more refined, there may be other things that become apparent that aren't quite there yet, that weren't visible in the initial reading of a rougher paper. This author's first, and then there are a set of very explicit discussions about sections of the paper, including line-by-line reviews in some points, places where there's a query about language. But the first point that the reviewer makes of this resubmitted paper is about the journal. The reviewer says, given that this is a paper submitted to Gender in Education, it might be a good idea to raise the relevance of gender in the education in the introduction. Right now, gender does not come up until the literature review, so why is the paper pitched at Gender in Education? That is a very good question, and one that you must always keep in mind when you're reviewing for this journal and when you're submitting to this journal. If gender is not at front and centre in some way or other of the paper, then it's not being sent to the right journal. Now, in this instance, the revised paper, it looks like it did need to go to a new reviewer. So one of the original reviewers must have turned down the invitation to review. But nevertheless, this reviewer has given quite a responsive, generous and detailed reading of the paper. And she begins, I'm using she because I think that it was the case in this instance, although I am coming to this article for the first time, I can see that the article has already been substantially revised following previous comments and that the suggestions have been carefully and thoroughly followed. The reviewer is able to say that because when the author has resubmitted the paper, it has changes tracked, and that altered version is clearly apparent in the version that's available to me. The reviewer. The reviewer goes on and says, so the reviewer has sort of taken up the article within the terms of engagement that have already been laid out, largely. And fortunately, the reviewer is able to do that because the next sentence is, this is a fascinating and well-written article, which in my view does not require many substantial amendments to be readied for publication. Nevertheless, the reviewer still identifies major revisions because of a key point around, which is around gender again. And the first and very substantial, like half page discussion that the reviewer has engaged in is about the role of gender in this paper. What does gender mean in the context of this paper? This needs serious consideration. Anyway, the reviewer goes on, and a lot of discussion with the directed at the author about how gender still seems to be fairly peripheral and it's not foregrounded or made crucial throughout the article as we would expect. So I'm not going to read out all the line-by-line suggestions that are made about the particular usages of words contestation of concepts or suggestions about how small components of the argument might be reorganized to be more effective. Deletions, additions, expansions, all of those fine details are important, useful, and really appreciated by authors. And of course, when you're an author and you receive that sort of feedback, you are immensely grateful for the most part. So I think I've gone into enough detail about specific reviews. In general, a review should pay attention to the aims and scope of the journal. It should provide useful and detailed advice to the author, and it is also very useful to provide the author with a reflection of what you think that they've intended to achieve and how well they've done it, how well it connects to the discourse community of this particular journal, Gender and Education, and so on. Names of other key authors are very, very helpful for an author if you know them or you take the time to go and find what's useful. It ought to be a learning experience for the reviewer, I think, as well as for the author in a perfect world. So far, however, I have assumed that the papers are retrievable. Interesting enough, you have a thought as a reviewer that they fit within the scope and sequence of the journal, and that you have of the aims and scope, of the journal, and that you think it is worthwhile to engage at depth with this paper on its way to being published. Now, of course, there is a significant rejection rate also for the journal. There's been an initial screening, but you also have the option of deciding to reject a paper or to advise an author to reject and resubmit the paper. So we would also encourage you to be bold in your decisions about when a paper just isn't likely to be retrievable. If you really don't think that the article is making a contribution that's worthwhile, that's new, that's fresh, that's illuminating and interesting to people in away from their particular context, then please say so clearly in sufficient detail for the author to understand what's not working with the paper and select reject or reject and resubmit. There is no moral imperative to accept weak papers for this journal. That won't happen. It might open a long period of back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. That's not useful ultimately to the author if they are not able to bring the paper to an acceptable standard. So there's no obligation to engage in revisions or direct a paper towards that if you think that it's not likely that it will be acceptable. However, there is, I think, always an imperative to be polite, to be explicit early. I think that that's probably as much information as you want about peer review, and this is quite a long podcast, so I'll stop here. Don't hesitate to get in touch with the editors of the journal, and particularly our editorial manager, and the end point of this podcast will have to be a huge thank you to Helen Rowlands, who is the person who receives any email that is directed to the Gender and Education website, to the journal. And without Helen and her commitment to the journal and to working in a feminist, collaborative, respectful way, none of us would be able to get the work done.
So thanks for listening.